When all is ready, I throw this switch.
Ho, ho, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Christmas edition. A comic book podcast where we discuss the famous and infamous runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I'm Paul Merry Carr, and with me as always, Jingle Bells Reese.
Yeah, there really aren't. There's not any good bees, are there? Really?
All I could think of was Jingle Bell.
Yeah, I'll stick with Jingle Bell.
You can jingle all the way, Brian.
I can. Happy holidays, everybody.
Yes. Hopefully, my plan is that this will actually come out on Christmas Day.
Oh my!
Unless you're listening to this way in the future, then whatever. Happy Arbor Day. Today on the program, we're going to go way back to the golden age of comics to discuss the Superman, Superman's Christmas Adventure from 1940. And it's something to behold, friends. But before we do that, we're going to give our annual top five list of favorite comics of the year. And I'll just say, 2022, slim pickings.
Yeah, it's I already apologized to Paul. Apologies to our hundreds of thousands of listeners that my enthusiasm level may be a little muted on this one.
Yeah. It's not that there weren't good comics this year. It's just there's nothing that I was completely blown away by.
Yeah, I mean, like with every year, there's good comics that come out. There's comics that are, doing their job to produce content for 12 months of the year.
Yes.
There are, interesting creator-owned things coming out constantly on a variety of publishers, but it just, I was waiting to be grabbed, and really right. Excited. I mean, obviously last year we had a particular comic that
we both enjoyed quite a bit.
That was kind of a once in a, not a lifetime by any stretch of the imagination, but one that really captured us. Again, it's like the state of the comic industry. Everybody, we're not here to discuss the state of the comic book industry, at least in this particular episode. There are interesting things being made, but not all of them are for everybody. So none of this is to diminish great work that writers and artists are doing in the comics medium. It's just this year for me, and I think maybe for you as well, maybe there wasn't quite as much as appealing to us, say, as in other years. And next year we could have, a top 20 list. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. The other thing I have to say, I didn't notice it until I was actually writing them all down this morning. Four out of my five are all DC.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm thinking Disney's not going to be sending me the check unless I get back on the Marvel train soon.
this is a massive I'm the DC guy, you're the Marvel guy.
I know. I just wrote them all down and said these are my favorites, and I went, oh crap. Well, sir, enough caveats. Let's get to this. Let's plow through this as fast as we can. Would you like to start, or would I?
I could start. I'll start with in the past I've done runners up, and because I could never decide. And this year I'm just kind of there's a few comics I'm just going to throw out there that I enjoyed, but it didn't make the cut, and we don't have to discuss them. But I thought that that Texas Blood has been. Mm-hmm. Great. It's not a new comic, but it's been consistently great. I thought Minor Threats was fun. Parker Girls, the Trigger Keaton, Kyle Starks comic was fun. Love Everlasting by Tom King. It has a kind of fun meta thing going on. And then there's Human Target just keeps going. Saga came back. Swamp Thing ended. Good Asian ended. And Supergirl ended. Those are all comics that I enjoyed this year, but I don't really have anything to say about them.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to mention Supergirl as well.
Yeah.
Woman of Tomorrow is the one.
So coming in at number five was a comic by Peter Milligan and Mike Diodato called Absolution.
All right.
I'm a sucker for Peter Milligan, period. I just love Peter Milligan. I've loved him since the 80s, and not everything he does is great, but I felt like this comic, first of all, it's Mike Diodato, who has a very distinctive style. It's very grim and gritty, very dark, but I've always kind of enjoyed it as a fan. And with Peter Milligan, you know, what he did with Absolution is he crafted a comic that is very in the now. He's always had social commentary. His comics are always about social commentary. And in this one, it's about social media. It's about, it's very black, what is it, Black Mirror-esque, in that it's a hit woman who has to garner social media points to save her life because she has a thing implanted in her head because she was a bad guy in the past. I'm not describing it super right. well, but it's very violent. It's very dark, and it pokes a great amount of fun at how we in society are adhere to basically our social media and how we rank within our social media. And it puts it in a much more life or death term. So I thought Milligan did a really good job. There's one issue left, and it'll be interesting to see how he wraps it up. But I thought this one was a comic that when it would come out, it was like top of the pile for me. So Absolution by Peter Milligan and Mike Diodato.
Okay. Well, my number five, well, this was actually going to be later on the list, but I might as well, it seems apropos that I do it now. My number five will be Sacrament by Peter Milligan and Marcello Frusen. This is a horror comic, and it's The Exorcist in space. And it's about a priest who's lost his faith and has to fight an alien that is a demon alien. I really am hard to describe it, but it's really, really well done. And it's very dark, and it's very horror-esque, and it deals with some very poignant social issues about faith and about, you know, what you put your faith into and why.
Yeah, no, that's Sacrament is also Sacrament was close to making the list, but then we had talked a little bit, and I was like, oh, I feel like Paul might put that on the list, so I just kind of left it.
Yeah, most of mine actually have a horror tinge to it, believe it or not. Shocking.
I'm really surprised to hear that.
Yeah. What's your number four?
So because I cheat, number four is a tie. Because that's
for a guy who can't pick.
That's yes. Just how I roll. So at number four, I have a tie between Public Domain by Chip Zdarsky.
Good one.
And Batgirls by Becky Cloonan and Michael Conrad, with a few different artists, Jorge Corona, Neil Gouge, and Jonathan Case just did the latest episode or latest issue. So Public Domain is an Image comic. It is basically about the comic book industry. It's kind of a love letter to the comic book industry, but it's also very sharply satirical. It's about creators' rights, and it's also about fathers and sons, and it's about legacy. You know, Zdarsky's doing some incredible work right now. I mean, my God, the man is writing Daredevil and Batman.
Right.
Daredevil and Batman. I don't believe any single writer out there has been writing Daredevil and Batman at the same time.
Yeah, I was going to say at the same time.
There's a lot of writers who have written both of those characters. So it's very interesting with Zdarsky that he has, you know, he was an artist. You know, we know him from Sex Criminals. And that he has been able to pivot into not just a writer of some note, but a good writer of some note, mm-hmm. and a writer who is writing some of the most important characters in mainstream comics. And yet here he is still doing these great small indie projects. And with public domain, he's also drawing it himself. I don't know how the guy has time, because he's also writing other comics too. So he's writing independent comics. There's New Burn and is it Stillwater?
Stillwater, yeah.
And then Batman and Daredevil, and then writing and drawing public domain. Perhaps he's very lonely and has a lot of time.
I'm always impressed by that because of my levels of laziness and procrastination are through the roof. Mm-hmm. So how to have that kind of productivity is and to have it at a high quality, that's an amazing thing.
Right. And with Batgirls, my goodness, talk about a fun comic. Becky Cloonan gets it. She gets Stephanie Brown. She gets Cassandra Cain. She gets Barbara Gordon. And I just, for just sheer entertainment, kind of ersatz, wacky adventures, I thought Batgirls was wildly entertaining this year. And a comic I just really, really enjoyed. I don't think it's going to hit many other people's lists. It's not an important comic. It's not changing the industry in any way, shape, or form. But it's a hoot. And sometimes that's what I want. I you know, with Absolution, it's dark and heavy and has commentary. With Batgirls, it's like fun and breezy and really, I felt like it deserved to be in my top five because it probably entertained me on a very goofy, big superhero comics level in a way that other comics just didn't.
Right. And it's, you know, it probably gets you really pumped for the movie.
Oh, dear. Oh, my. Oh, Paul.
Yes. Well, my number four is a cheat. It's Human Target by Tom King and Greg Smallwood. Technically, it started last year, but most of it was in 2022. And it came to an end to this. No, not an end, but it came to a conclude. The first trade was released this year. Let's say that.
Right.
And it's just been great. It's Tom King, and he has really latched onto that niche of his of reinterpreting kind of D-list characters as psychologically damaged human beings. And it's just really, really well done. It feels like it's set in the 60s. It's not, but it feels like a 60s aesthetic.
Right. Well, it's got that 60s aesthetic. I mean, it's that noirish 60s bachelor pad space age feel in the design, and
you could picture a young Michael Caine in it, or Steve McQueen or something like that playing that role. By the way, little note, if you want to say the name Michael Caine in his accent, you say my cocaine. Hello, I'm Mike O'Kane. Anyway, a little helpful hint for an impression.
Wow, that is not a thing I had ever thought of before.
But anyway, yes, Human Target. It's very good, and it's Tom King, man. He's killing it. What's your number three?
My number three is Defenders Beyond.
Really?
Yes, the miniseries by Al Ewing and the phenomenal Javier Rodriguez.
Yes.
Again, kind of like Batgirls, some of the big ticket comics this year just didn't move me. And yet here was this little mini series about one of my very favorite teams, the Defenders, because they're not a team. And, you know, I mean, the cast is it's Tigra, it's Loki. You can never go bad or go wrong with Loki. What is it, Blue Marvel, a character I don't really know anything about because I don't follow that part of the Marvel universe. And Galactus's mom, right?
Galactus's mom, I know, yeah.
Galactus's mom. And, of course, the Beyonder dithering about having existential crises. But the comic just is batshit crazy. In part, Al Ewing does a great job with writing it. But visually, it's maybe my favorite comic of the year. Javier Rodriguez just does a fantastic job with the art. It just bounces around, and it's who's the guy that does Nightwing currently?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, I can't remember.
I'm not reading Nightwing, so sorry.
Yeah. But you know, it's got that thing where it's, you know, I mean, panels just mash into each other, and he does the whole off-panel thing where and you get the sort of some meta stuff going on. I don't have a great you know, long piece to write about like this comic, but like Batgirls, it just entertains the hell out of me. So I don't know. It was a lot of fun. It's, yeah. I'm choosing fun comics.
And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, my number one will be a fun comic, but my number three is Detective Comics by Rom V and Raphael Albuquerque.
Yeah.
Yeah. This again has a horror feel to it,
mm-hmm.
especially in the artwork. I mean, Raphael Albuquerque's artwork in this is stunning. You know, it's dark and, I don't know, creepy.
Is it grim and gritty?
It's, see, that's the thing. It looks dark and creepy, but it's not really grim and gritty. I mean, it has a darker feel to it than because it's Rom V, but there's still some hopeful stuff. And Batman does detective work in it. In Detective Comics.
In Detective Comics, there's detective work being done?
Yes.
No, I love Albuquerque. He's got a cartoony style.
Yeah, but it's very unique.
No, but I mean that as a positive. So, you know, when we were joking about the grim and gritty and you were saying, but it looks grim and gritty, but is it really? Because Albuquerque's style does have what I would call like a nice cartoony aspect to it. And I mean that as a compliment.
Yeah, it's stylized. Again, this is just, there hasn't been a lot of issues just yet, but it's Rom V, and Rom V is just knocking everything out of the park these days.
Well, and I think it's a prelude too. So with Detective, we're still in the prelude to what's about to really go down.
So maybe it'll make the list next year too. Who knows?
I've really been enjoying it myself.
What's next?
Number two for me was Superman Space Age, Mark Russell and Mike Allred.
Okay, I'm just going to say this right now. This was mine as well. So
no, at number two?
Well, it's number one.
Oh, okay.
Might as well just say it now, so we'll both talk about it at the same time. It's history, hope, and politics, man.
It is, and it's bright and shiny.
Yes.
The masterful Mike Allred.
And it proves you can tell a poignant, hopeful story without being, you know, you don't have to be dark and gritty for it to be poignant.
Right. Well, and I think what I love about this, and this is why this is a longer conversation, but
no worries.
Stories like this, I think DC just, this is a much longer conversation, but I'll keep it as brief as possible. I don't think Marvel can do these types of stories, or they don't do them as well. And some of that has to do with history. But when you think about these kind of grand, you know, stories with it's like a New Frontier.
Right. That's what I was just thinking that, actually.
And, you know, it's like DC does these better because of the way that the two companies, this isn't a knock on Marvel because they do other things much better than DC does. But these kind of evergreen, world-building, nostalgic—it's hard for me to put into words again because I think it's a longer conversation. But what Superman Space Age does, it's the history of the world viewed through this lens that is with the sort of over-the-top mythology. And because Marvel has always been street level in many ways, they do cosmic really well too. But the way that Marvel was constructed and the way that DC was constructed, it just, Superman Space Age, it just nails this level of kind of wide-eyed mythology that we'll save this conversation for another time.
Yeah, that word you just used, mythology, that's what DC does really well. You know, because Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, they are the pantheon,
right?
The Trinity, you know, and their whole thing is mythological, larger than life. Whereas Marvel is, you know, they're people who just happen to have these powers.
Right.
You know, and it's, neither one is better than the other. It's just what they do.
Exactly. No. And again, but what Mark Russell and Mike Allred are doing here is really, I'm really looking forward to. I almost didn't list this because I wanted to wait for the third issue. But then I was like, you know what? I'm just gonna, we got two this year, I think. And yes. And so anyway, so that was, so this was my number two and your number one.
Right. And, you know, I just want to say, curious. I just want to say my thing is about Mark Russell and his, the way he writes and the way he writes politics and, mm-hmm. You know, and the way he interweaves, you know, real world incidents and people into this mythology is, you know, it's very good. It's the same thing he did with his, you know, Snagglepuss and Flintstones right. and things. But it, yeah, but it's just, he's just, he's really good.
Yeah.
When he's on, he's really on.
Yeah,
you know,
when he's off, it's a little over the top. We've talked about this before, but this is Mark Russell at
his best.
So I'm curious. So this was your number one and my number two,
right?
So I guess I'll do. Do you want to do your number two, which may be also similar to my number one? I don't know. I'm curious.
I doubt it. I doubt okay. you chose my number two.
Okay.
I'll do my number two. You can do your number one. So okay. my number two is Nightmare Country. It's James okay. Tynion
right.
IV. Yes. Yeah. Nightmare Country by James Tynion. It's Lissandro. I don't know how to pronounce the name. Estheren.
Wow.
It's Estheren.
I'm just going to believe you.
Lissandro E. Anyway, it's set in the Sandman universe. It is basically the Dreaming, but it's a horror. It's a horror comic based on the Dreaming,
right?
Yeah, and it follows the Corinthian kind of weaving his way in and out of nightmares, trying to find this entity it's a nightmare that's not been created by Dream. It's really good. It's horrifying. It's actually funny at times. I've just been really enjoying it. Again, I don't think it's not something that you say like, this is one of the best comics I've ever read, but it's something I've really been enjoying and I look forward to it every month.
I very much enjoyed the comic too. And it definitely gives me the Sandman feels both in look and tone.
Right. But that's it. That's my list. What's your number one?
My number one is, you probably are guessing this, is 8 Billion Genies.
Yes, that was going to make my list too, but I knew you were going to choose it, so I let you do it.
Charles Soule and Ryan Brown. And it's hard to describe. I mean, it's not. It's a really interesting idea, right? And it's like everybody gets a genie. They all get their wishes. Everybody gets a wish. Everybody on the planet. Of course, things go south quickly. I think this comic has really taken off. It's a big deal. So I don't know if there's much that I need to do to sell it.
No, it's really good. The art is really good. And Charles Soule, I mean, I've really been enjoying Charles Soule a lot.
Yeah. And it's, there was a time in which I was kind of down on Charles Soule. I thought in many ways he was kind of a bland, by the numbers writer. He was writing too many comics, but with this, I think I've complimented some of the, like, I didn't mind his work on Daredevil. So, but, with 8 Billion Genies, he takes a really interesting idea. He starts it off with a story trope that I love, which is the, you know, the gathering in a tavern. Right. You know, it's like, it's essentially the tavern at the end of the world for all intents and purposes. And there's some mystery there. And of course, we're introduced to a variety. It's Chaucerian.
Exactly.
And it's
Chaucer kind of combined with 1001 Nights, you know.
Right. And it's a very, very well done comic. Does it match other comics that I've loved more in the past? Now, you know, sure, no, there's some issues with it. But overall, I think he's having a really good time writing this comic book, and I've been having a really good time reading it, and I love the idea. So yeah, that's my top five.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I've been really enjoying Charles Soule, especially High Republic, the Star Wars High Republic stuff.
Right.
I know, I don't think you've been reading that as much as I have, but Charles Soule also wrote some of the novels, and they're really good. So anyway, yeah. But so I've been enjoying Charles Soule, and this has been just something different and fun.
Yeah, and I think it's a really, you know, it's not the most unique story, but what he's done with it has been absolutely unique in the way he's writing it. So I think kudos to this comic. It's fun.
Absolutely. All right, I will put these up in the show notes when I actually post this on Christmas Day. So you can all go out and check these out if you haven't read them already. In the meantime, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about, wow, A Christmas Story. It's going to be it's a good one.
All right. This is going to be fun. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah. So take a break when we come back. Superman's Christmas Adventure.
And we're back after we've all taken time to appreciate the majesty of our top five lists. We are going to talk about one of the greatest 16-page comics ever produced in the history of the entire world. And Paul, this was your recommendation.
I think you're overselling it a bit, but okay. I'm not one to dwell on plot holes. In fact, if you want to get right down to it, I personally believe that plot holes don't exist. You see, when you find an inconsistency or a continuity error in a story, this isn't something that was just overlooked. There are teams of editors and proofreaders poring over and dissecting every word and story beat. So when we come across something that we consider to be a plot hole, understand that this isn't a mistake, it's a choice. And there are many reasons for this. It could be budgetary reasons, page count, pacing, or maybe the creators just don't give a damn. Whatever the reason, someone made the conscious decision, the choice, to include what someone would consider to be a plot hole. In the Superman Christmas Adventure from 1940, writer Jerry Siegel and artist Jack Burnley, they made a lot of choices. The story begins, as many Christmas stories do, during the holiday season. Perry White notices this and sends out his two top reporters to cover the shopping experience at department stores. You know, like most newspapers do. While there, Lois Lane and Clark Kent decide to start a charity toy giveaway. This warms the heart of Santa Claus, and thus we get the first canonical appearance of Santa in the DC universe. Clark Kent then does a little voyeurism in an apartment building and notices an ungrateful rich kid. Then Superman plays Ghost of Krypton Past and teaches the kid the true meaning of Christmas. Meanwhile, villain Dr. Grouch and his crony Mr. Meanie arrive at the North Pole in a phallic spaceship and demand that Santa stop giving away toys because it infringes on capitalism. Santa proclaims you have nothing to lose but your chains, and he sicks his elves, on them and sends them on their way. After a bit of arson and attempted murder, Grouch and Meanie try some kidnapping and strap Lois Lane to a giant firecracker to launch her into space before knocking out Santa's reindeer with a sleeping gas gun. In case you're wondering, no, I haven't had a stroke. These are all things that actually happen in this story. Superman then has to carry Santa in his sleigh to deliver toys around the world, while Dr. Grouch and Mr. Meanie are defeated by the power of presents. None of this makes what anyone would remotely consider to be sense. And yes, there are plot holes large enough to maneuver a Superman-driven sleigh through, but I don't think that's the point. The point is just to have fun, to embrace the joy and wackiness of the season, while sprinkling in a message of kindness and generosity towards others. This is a madcap story, a romp with loads of golden age comic silliness wrapped up in a colorful paper, tied up with a bow. It doesn't make sense. And if you think too hard about it, It'll make your head hurt. But if you just embrace the weirdness of it all, you'll find that this Christmas story is super. So, Brian, what did you think of the Superman Christmas Adventure?
Well, I'm a little irritated with your intro, Paul, because you covered some of the beats I was waiting to talk about.
Dude, there's so much more.
Dadgummit.
we could dive deep into it.
I want to point out that you missed the opportunity. Not only was there the phallic spaceship, but, and this is like in my notes, it was a phallic spaceship about to crash into a giant boob.
I had actually considered trying to do that. Trying to put that in a paddle that was reminiscent of Sex Education. Yes, I was trying to be brief.
Oh man, I do want to point out that normally when we cover comics, I take handwritten notes, right. And usually there's about a page per issue.
Yes.
I have 2 pages of notes for 16 pages of comic book text. The first thing I want to say is how great this comic book looks. When I say that, I don't mean it in terms of what we think of now as great comic book art. Comic book art has changed dramatically over the years. But this is bright and shiny. And the line drawing, and it just, I think comics art back in the day gets a bad rap because it was done rapidly.
It was new and it was emerging. It was, you know,
right.
And we're learning how to do it, basically.
You literally had 4 colors. I love the look of this comic. I think it's clean and, and it just,
you're at a loss for words here.
I'm at a loss for words.
Yeah. This is the oldest comic we've done so far. Before this, we did Legion of Superheroes, which is like 56 or something.
Right. And we had the Uncle Scrooge in there somewhere, which goes back.
Right. That's right. Yeah. But this is, you know, this is true Golden Age comics. I mean,
yeah, this is the nascent years.
Yes. So much text. Just so much text.
So much unnecessary text.
There's lots of things like Clark Kent says swell a lot.
I know. I have swell written writ large on my notes. So, but the comic starts with the line, you know, a period of gaiety and goodwill among men.
There's also, those scoundrels may seek to undermine all that Christmas signifies. The triumphant spirit of Christmas shall exist eternally, says Fox News.
It's very purple, the prose. But, you know, even starting off with, Perry White, newsman extraordinaire.
Right.
Right. And he is the editor, the top chief of the Daily Planet. Of course, his bona fides are, you know, through the roof in terms of being like a great reporter, and great reporters notice things.
Yes. Oh, right.
They are on top of a story. They can anticipate. They can see where things are going. They know their timelines. So editor extraordinaire Perry White states, and I quote, "This snowfall reminds me that Christmas is almost here."
Yeah. Nothing gets past Perry White.
Nothing gets past Perry White. I mean, that's some investigative journalism.
Well, that's the thing. My two best investigative reporters, go check out the department stores and tell me what the shopping's like down there. Which brings us to, so they go down to the, you know, Lois and Clark go down to the department stores to check out what it's like shopping at Christmas. And it brings me to my first question, Brian. We find out that there's poor kids who might not get gifts, but there's Santa Claus. We know that he exists. We find out in this that he exists for real. Why would there be poor kids not getting gifts then?
Exactly. Well, and the whole thing is, you know, it's like, so, I mean, first of all, when they go shopping, I love the fact that they meet this poor kid, Billy, right?
Yes.
And Clark immediately, somehow knows the kid's first and last name and his address.
Yeah, you live on Drake Street, kid.
Right.
I'll make sure Santa gets you a gift. Ah.
Yeah. And so, in keeping with your point, so they decide to donate old, you know, and so Clark and Lois come up with this great thing. It's like, hey, you know, there's this poor kid, Billy.
I bet there's other poor kids, too.
There might be other poor kids who might live in the tenements. And
I know.
And so, you know, they come up with this great idea, right, to donate old and used toys. First of all, and I'm getting to your point, I promise. So first of all, why don't you set up a charity to give them new unused toys?
Exactly. Because
so, issue one. But yes, to your point, so they run it by Perry White, and he says, yes, that's a great idea. Let's get people to donate their junky old crap, and we'll fix it up, and we'll give it to poor kids, because poor kids get junky old crap. And so, of course, there's a panel where Santa Claus is reading the Daily Planet, because he does.
So, yeah, I guess maybe it's like the New York Times. People here in Colorado read the New York Times. People right. in the North Pole read the Metropolis Daily Planet.
He's got nothing else to do. I mean, Santa's just sitting around going, let's see what's happening in the social, you know, section of...
He only works one day a year. I mean, come on.
So, of course, so to your point, Santa's like, hey, this is great. I've got Lois Lane and Clark Kent helping me out this year.
Instead of saying...
Gosh, maybe I should be... Right. And
maybe,
so,
maybe I could help out those poor kids.
Yeah, why is Santa Claus not giving toys to poor kids?
Hey, look, man, you can't. There's no free lunch. You got to work for what you get. By the way, everything we just discussed is like a page and a half of story.
If that,
yeah.
there's 16 pages.
There's a lot. It's a very dense story, and I love this. I kind of mentioned it in the intro. Clark Kent's just walking around, and he says, "Huh. I wonder what's happening in this apartment building." And he uses his X-ray vision to look inside. Does he do that a lot?
Yeah, and that's, again, you hit all these beats that I wrote. You know, is Clark Kent a pervert?
Wonder what's going on in here. Yeah, he's a creeper.
Why is he just random? Because in later years, there's whole bits about how Superman is, you know, Clark, and he willingly does not listen in on every conversation. He willingly,
yes,
you know, doesn't peep in people's homes.
Well, in the Christopher Reeve, the original Superman, he does mention he knows what color Lois's underwear is.
Oh, right.
That's a thing that he does.
Yeah.
So maybe he is. He's a little bit of a perv.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think these are larger questions that need to be addressed outside of the holidays.
Absolutely.
But I do think we need to acknowledge that Superman was peeking into people's apartments.
Yes. So in this apartment that he peeks into, he finds Mr. James Daniels, who is a young sort of spoiled little kid who he doesn't like his toys. They're not good enough for him.
No.
And his butler is not happy with him. So Superman sneaks into his room at night. He does say, "Don't be frightened. I'm not going to hurt you." Good. But he does take him and fly him away.
He kidnaps a child.
He kidnaps a child to teach him a lesson. It's a very Christmas Carol type of thing where he flies him around. Yeah. And we're making fun of this, but... it actually is a nice, it's a nice idea where Superman flies this kid around, this rich kid, and shows him various poor children who are just happy with what they have.
Right. The little girl has an old doll.
In the tenement.
In the tenements.
Yes. So they're happy with what they have, except for the one boy who's crying miserably to himself.
Right. And that's Billy.
James learns the error of his ways and, hopefully becomes a better person in the future.
Right. Yes. Yeah. He's, you know, all it took was a visit to, well, it was like just two different homes. It's in the tenements. And suddenly he is forever changed.
Well, being swiped from your room and flown around probably, you know, it's a little scared straight kind of thing for him.
Well, you know, and there's really no like, holy shit, Superman's in my room.
Yes, but you know, but the message is good, is a good one. I like the, you know, he does have, you know, he never realized how much he had. But meanwhile, far away.
Meanwhile, back at the North Pole.
Phallic spaceship flies into a boob.
I have written a penis pokes into a boob, but we'll go with the...
I'm trying to be classy here.
We're a classy organization. It's yes. Classy.
And then the classic villains that everyone knows, Dr. Grouch.
Apparently everyone knows. We'll get to that.
Yeah. Dr. Grouch and Mr. Meanie.
So I have to be honest, with Dr. Grouch, I feel seen. I had to post that on social media. I was like, there's a character in this comic I'm reading. His name is Dr. Grouch.
By this. Someone called him Mr. Grouch once, and he said, hey, I did not spend 8 years in medical school to be called Mr. Grouch. Thank you very much.
And by the way, Mr. Meanie is spelled M-E-A-N-E-Y, so there's no... no connection to the word meanie and then his last name.
Yes, no connection at all. They get to the North Pole and they introduce themselves to Santa, and then they threaten him.
With one of the great quotes, right?
Yes.
Which I think you've already referenced.
Well, we demand that you conform to our way of thinking or suffer the consequences. Because they want to make the toys for Santa Claus and sell them.
They want to monetize the business.
Exactly. And they're very upset that Santa Claus is just giving things away like a socialist. He even wears a red suit.
Yeah. Well, yeah. See? This is kind of, and we'll get to this elsewhere too. I feel like there's like a little bit of social commentary running through this comic. Am I wrong, Paul?
No. I mean, it's unusual because, you know, back in the day, there was no politics in comics.
No, that's a new woke thing.
Yeah.
Politics never existed in comics until they started letting women and people of color start writing.
Exactly. So there's no... I guess it's all just a coincidence that it seems like it's social commentary.
I'm being facetious when I say letting. I don't want someone to...
Yes, I think the sarcasm is bleeding through.
Okay.
Whew, yes. So Santa, the commie that he is, sets his little revolutionaries on them.
His slaves, you mean? Oh, I'm sorry. His indentured servants? His...
his prisoners with jobs. No, they're his good friends.
They're his good friends, and they're happy.
Yeah, he says, I'll have my little people talk to you.
Right, yeah, they're happy workers.
Exactly. They all seem to be happy.
They do, actually, you know.
Santa does shake his fist at the phallic spaceship, and one of the elves says, calm yourself, Santa, they're gone. there's a lot of comments in this that seem harsh, and maybe I'm just reading the tone into it, because you could just be like, hey, calm yourself, Santa.
Well, you have to read it in sort of the entertainment parlance of the day. You know, when you watch films during the day, it's like, say, we gotta do a thing.
Yeah. Calm yourself, Santa.
Calm yourself, Santa. We gotta save the farm. Let's do a show.
So, Grouch and Meanie, since they have been thwarted by Santa himself, they do the next best thing. They try to stop Lois and Clark from giving away broken toys.
Right. Yeah, the Daily Planet's Department for Distributing Toys.
Because that's the hierarchy. You got Santa Claus and then the Daily Planet giving away toys. That's how the hierarchy of charity works.
Fixed up, used, broken toys.
Yes. So... as I mentioned in the introduction, they do a little, they knock them both out and then set the place on fire. As you do. That escalated quickly.
Well, luckily Clark's like, I'll pretend to be unconscious.
It is fun, though, when Lois comes to. He, of course, well, he puts out the fire with his super breath. And Lois comes to and he does pretend to be the frail Clark Kent. Right. I kind of like that. And then they immediately call the cops because someone tried to kill them. Oh, no, they don't. Lois just goes and confronts Meanie and Grouch at their house.
Well, what's even better is, like, before Lois is knocked out by the sleeping gas, right?
Yeah.
She en masse Dr. Grouch, and she's like, oh my gosh, it's Dr. Grouch!
Yes, obviously everyone knows Dr. Grouch.
Does everybody know who Dr. Grouch is? This isn't the first time where, like, everybody knows who Dr. Grouch is. Well, and if everybody knows who Dr. Grouch is, how come something hasn't been done before this?
Exactly. Is this his first time? You know, just
I mean, I know Lois Lane is a fantastic, incredible investigative reporter, but
with amazing hair, I should say.
Right.
She's always coiffed.
But she's just immediately like, oh, no, it's Dr. Grouch.
And then she says, I recognize Dr. Grouch. If I ever catch up with him again, I tell you. You know who it is, and he tried to kill you. Go to the cops, maybe?
Or maybe Superman, with his super hearing and his pervy supervision, can just find them. If he can snoop in on little boys sleeping in their beds, can't he, find Dr. Grouch? I don't know.
Meany immediately, once he finds out that they're still alive, Mr. Meany basically says, okay, we failed. I guess we're just done. No, Grouch doubles down and...
Can we go back for a quick moment?
Sure.
Because I do want to point out that Grouch and Meany find out that their plan didn't work by tuning into Clark TV. They go back to their lair and they're like, let's see what happens. And they turn on the television.
And they can't believe their eyes.
When they turn on the television, it's just an image of Clark just sitting there like wrapping presents. So does Clark Kent is there a TV channel that's just Clark Kent Television?
Yeah, it was a local UHF channel, community television.
It was community TV.
Look, this is 1940. There weren't a lot of options for television back in the day.
And then is it Meany? I forget if it's Meany or Grouch, but the great quote, miraculously unharmed. This is ghastly
in very bold letters. So Lois goes and tries to, she knows where they might be.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes to apprehend them and she stows away in their vessel in the phallic spaceship. Right. And they fly back up to the North Pole and they
again,
and they attempt to steal Santa's reindeer. But first, before they do, they find Lois Lane on the ship and they tried to do away with her by, of course, tying her to a giant firecracker and launching her into space.
And now see, and I thought this was an Acme rocket.
It could be an Acme rocket. This is
before Warner Brothers owned DC.
Oh, yes. There's no branding.
But I was fully expecting, because this is an Acme rocket, right?
Yes, it does look like an Acme rocket. I bet the Coyote's tied to the other side.
Possibly.
Yes.
Accidentally, because it was supposed to be the Roadrunner.
Grouch lights the fuse, to which Mr. Meany says, what better way is there to dispose of you than shooting you into the heavens? I think I could come up with a couple other better ways, I think.
Well, but
Grouch and Meany attempt to, they take a couple of axes and they try to destroy all of Santa's toys.
Which leads to perhaps the greatest quote in the comic. Tears, tears, the world will be flooded by the tears of little children.
And Dr. Grouch says, this is great.
This is great.
Disappointing children and wanton violence.
Yeah.
This is great.
The world will be flooded by the tears of little children. I mean, that's almost poetic.
To get rid of them, obviously, Santa Claus winds up a bunch of toy soldiers and sends the soldiers after them, which sends them on their way.
And off they go. They leave the North Pole for the second time.
Routed by toys. This is humiliating. This is when they try to steal the reindeer.
Right.
But first...
Let's not forget that Lois, Superman saves Lois, right?
Yeah. So first, she's shot into space. Well, she's not quite into space. Yeah, Superman hears her yelling for help on the back of let's face it, it's a giant bottle rocket.
Right.
Superman does save her because, you know, he's Superman. It's what he does. Mm-hmm. And this is another one of those things where I guess I'm reading the tone wrong because Lois says, he drops Lois off on a rooftop and says, and she says, wait. I haven't thanked you. And he says, save your thanks. And again, I'm probably reading the tone wrong on that.
Well, he may be expecting a different kind of Christmas present.
I'll be back with my phallic spaceship, if you know what I mean. So it doesn't take long before Lois Lane is abducted yet again. By the way, we're still only like third of the way through this comic.
I think we're about a third of the way at this point.
A third of the way. Meanwhile, Santa realizes all his reindeer are missing. So he puts out an urgent call for Superman.
On the radio.
On the radio.
From his radio station at the North Pole.
And to be fair, Clark does hear it and says, it might be a hoax, but I better check it out. Due diligence and all that. He is a reporter. So he flies up north again.
Superhero, but...
So he flies up north, finds out all his reindeer are missing. So Superman sees a truck driven by Meanie and Dr. Grouch, the 1940s equivalent of an 18-wheeler. He lifts it up and dumps it out.
While saying, pardon my intrusion, old top. I didn't realize that Clark Kent was British.
Well, you know, it was very hoity-toity back in the day. He releases the reindeer, and then Dr. Grouch and Mr. Meanie just knock them out with his gas gun, because they have gas guns.
They have gas guns, right? Which featured previously, but followed by the great line. I'm sorry, there's so many great lines in this, and I have to like do some of them. Ha! Gloom will pervade the universe after all. Because they've done it. They foiled it. He gassed the reindeer. There's no way Santa can deliver all of his presents to, I guess, not everybody, because the poor kids don't get presents from Santa. Anyway, go on.
So, yeah, so the reindeer are out cold. There's no way that they can deliver the toys on time. But Superman, with your cape so bright, won't you carry my sleigh tonight? So, yes, Superman decides that he will carry Santa in his sleigh to deliver all the toys. But he does throw Dr. Grouch in there, too, so he has to see.
You know, well, no, it's Mr. Meanie.
Is it Mr. Meanie?
Yeah, Dr. Grouch is at home through all of this. It's all Mr. Meanie doing all this work.
That's right. It is Mr. Meanie. You are correct.
Which I don't quite get either. I mean, you know, Dr. Grouch presents as the big bad, but then, you know, Mr. Meanie does all the work.
Well, that's typical, you know, robber baron.
Right.
Where you have the rich guy and then the butler has to go out and do everything. Yeah. So... In kind of a callback, he has, you know, Meanie has to go around and see all the different children that gets all the toys. So it's kind of a callback. I mean, this is a carefully crafted story.
Right. Oh, and Superman has. Never mind. Go on.
So they deliver all the toys. Christmas is saved. Hurrah! And then Superman throws Mr. Meanie full speed into a chimney. I mean, there's no gentleness about this. He just tosses him right down there. Yeah. Help, says Mr. Meanie.
It's like a lightsaber going vertical down through the center of the earth.
Oh, yes. A recent episode of Rick and Morty. We cut to the inside of the house. Meanie is disheveled at the just outside the fireplace from being shoved down the chimney.
His colors are askew.
Oh, yes. But then they're still determined to ruin Christmas.
They're hiding out in the back room.
But they find out that Santa Claus, even though they've done all these bad things, he still left them a gift.
Yeah, a stack of them.
A stack of them. Yeah. The hell with the poor kids. But, you know, the criminal mastermind.
Right. The criminal mastermind gets gifts, but Billy's still waiting for his.
Yeah. Billy is still crying miserably in his dilapidated bed in the tenement. Yeah.
In the tenement.
But seeing the generosity, finally getting a gift, because he never got a gift.
See, okay. And there's a darker question here, but finish up your thought.
Well, I was just going to say, it just goes to show, hug your kids, people, or they might grow up to be horrible, horrible people.
Could Billy turn into Dr. Grouch down the line? Because Dr. Grouch never got a gift.
Yes, but you also need money. Sorry.
Right, well, there's
that. Yeah. Everything's fine now, and... Meanie wants to apologize to Lois Lane for all the bad things he did. I think we're cool.
Remember, they kidnapped her.
Oh, yeah. They've kidnapped her. They've shot her into space. They attempted to burn her.
So she's basically taken off the board for like the second half of the comic. And then it's like, so, right, Santa and Superman deliver the gifts. and yeah. Meanie and Grouch are suddenly completely and utterly changed and transformed.
Yes, they're better.
I'd like to shake your hand, sir.
They're better people. And Lois says, no apologies necessary. If you've got the Christmas spirit, then I'm satisfied.
You've kidnapped and tried to kill me numerous times, but now you have the Christmas spirit, so all is well.
Yes, 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 yes. And then finally, back at the building, old little Jimmy, or James, sorry, old James.
Little Rich James Daniels.
Little Richie Rich James shows up with a whole bunch of toys for the poor people. And everything's great, man.
Because apparently Santa's still not giving the poor people presents.
But then we get a moral of the story.
Oh, right, yes.
Yes. I hope all you readers will remember to be generous to those less fortunate than yourselves. And have a Merry Christmas to you and a very Happy New Year. We're making fun of this comic because it's ridiculous. But it has a good message. And you were right when you said earlier, I think there's a little bit of subversion sneaking in there.
Well, I mean, I think there definitely isn't. And I had some hyperbole, I loved the hell out of this comic. This is like the sheer amount of fun packed into 16 pages.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
There is more in these 16 pages than some people Jonathan Hickman do in like 12 issues of a
comic. Brian Michael Bendis would read this and say, dude, this could be a year's worth of comics.
Yeah. Yes, I think there is definitely subversion. I think that the time this was written, 1940, there was a lot of very interesting things going on, not just in the world, because we were about to get Superman punching Nazis.
Right, but we're just coming out of they're just coming out of the Great Depression.
Right. Well, and I don't think the Depression is over yet.
Well, but it is lessening. I mean, it's gotten better.
It's gotten better. We say that as experts of folks who have grown up. Some people may think I'm that old when they listen.
Yes, I remember back in the day. And
I remember, the damn kids with the poor and the money and the...
Give me a Werther's original, will you, please?
Happy New Year to you, George Bailey.
Yeah.
In jail. one of the greatest moments in film history. So it was, the time was very interesting, and you had, without getting too into it, you had a strong sort of union idea that was in play. You had a strong, the communism, not what we generically think of now, but there was a very kind of strong undercurrent of looking at whether it be Trotsky or whether it be Marx or whoever. I mean, we're not a history podcast, but a lot of very interesting political undercurrents going on in the country at the time.
Absolutely. Not just,
again, not, I we're mean, not historians. Don't at us with this stuff. Yeah.
Exactly. We are doing very surface level stuff here, but but even with FDR's programs, the NRA, the original NRA, these were very socialist programs. There was a huge backlash at the time from conservative people who didn't like all this giving stuff away to people and helping the nanny state beginning and all that hoo-ha. But that was definitely this feeling of, our country's in trouble. We should help each other.
Right.
It was an unprecedented moment in our history where where Americans actually tried to help each other. It's amazing.
So I think we would be remiss if we ignored what I think is some underlying context in this, but don't get us wrong. This is not a heavy-handed political screed. This is a wacky, goofy comic book from the 1940s, which I believe was made to be given away at department stores. The history is a little sketchy on this, right?
Yeah, I tried to do some little bit of research on this to see exactly where it originally showed up. And there's either places don't mention it, or when they do, it contradicts each other. So it's a little sketchy. I was going to avoid that because I don't know for sure.
Right. Well, and we're not trying to, you know, but I think, you know, the fact that this may have been created to sell product is also fascinating.
Here's the thing. Okay. So it starts out, when I started reading this comic, it starts out pretty straightforward how I thought this comic would go. You know, right. There's some poor kids who aren't getting gifts. Superman teaches someone the meaning of Christmas and everyone should be generous. And then you turn a page and the capitalist robber baron is trying to take over Santa Claus's workshop. And then they try to burn down the Daily Planet. And then they kidnap Lois Lane and tie her to a firecracker. I mean, it's like, this is just getting nuts every single page.
It's vastly creative.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I every page I turned and just said, oh, I wasn't expecting that.
And that's the thing. This is like an incredibly creative comic book. People play it safe nowadays in terms of, you know, but this is like comics from that day. It was like the sky was the limit.
Oh, absolutely.
And threw every completely nutty thing at the wall.
And see if it works. And this, I mean,
because there's no fanboys out there getting cranky about shit.
And this wasn't, you know, the early days where, you know, there weren't any rules or conventions. And I mean, like, not conventions, like people going to a big building with stuff, you know. Yeah, it was all new and just like, well, how do we do this? I don't know. Let's just make it up as we go along.
It's like great sci-fi, which at the end of the day is comics' natural precursor. And, you know.
Oh, yeah. Fantasy sci-fi.
It's just... you know, let's just create insanity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just let it go. Run amok. Yeah, there's absolutely. So much fun to be had reading stories like this that we don't get as much now. This isn't, there are great comics being made. I'm not, man, this comic, this is, I love this comic on so many levels.
Yeah.
Not just for the holiday part of it, not just for the silly quotes, I just love the fact that the freedom be as crazy as you want.
Right. Just, it's just,
and
it's
not
just...
even to try to make sense. It's like your intro where you talk about plot holes. Nobody gave a flying fig about plot holes in 1940.
Yeah. It's just silly. I mean, it didn't matter that it didn't make sense because it's just fun, you know? And I think, I mean, we both mentioned Superman Space Age, which still has, I mean, it's a more modern take on this silly, wacky stuff. I mean, it's not as insane as this is, but it's still in the same, it's still in the same vein. And I like that. I'd like more comics to be wacky, you know, and especially something like Superman, even Batman, just be wacky, you know, you don't have to be breaking Zod's neck to make a point.
Right.
You know, this comic is it's off the wall crazy, but it still has a good message. You know, be nice to people. That's cool.
Yeah. Be nice to people. What is how out there is that?
I know. You know, it's Christmas. Maybe we should just be kind.
No, I just I love this thing from start to finish. And I think this was a phenomenal recommendation, and I'm really happy we did this.
Excellent.
So thank you for a recommendation. I had never read this before you recommended it, so I didn't know this had existed.
I was trying to find something that was Christmas. I was trying to find something that was Christmas oriented, and I randomly came across this and read it and said, oh yeah, this is what we're doing.
And I think going forward for our future holiday podcasts, I want to do more of this and not like some, you know, dark, unpleasant.
Yeah.
You know, well, I think this just fits the spirit of the season, however one celebrates it, so much better than a ton of other choices we could have gone with.
Good. I'm glad you liked it because I got a huge kick out of it myself. Yeah. Well, I don't think there's much more to say. I think we've covered it. So we won't be back until after the new year. But when we do come back, Brian, what are we going to do?
Well, Paul, when we return, we're going to revisit 1985. Ooh. And we're going to be reading the Ann Nocenti and Art Adams miniseries Long Shot, issues 1-6.
Yay!
I feel like I did Ann Nocenti dirty the last time I recommended something by her, even though she's one of my favorite writers. So I'm hoping this will redeem us in her eyes, because I know she is definitely paying attention to.
I remember this being a very good, entertaining comic, but it has been many, many a years.
It's low these many years. Yes. So I don't believe I've written the reread. I don't believe I've read this since maybe 1985. So
it's been, I think it was mid 90s when I read it. So maybe we'll get lucky. Hey, thank you.
Well, hopefully we'll get our mojo back anyway.
Absolutely. So next time when we come back in the new year in 2023, we will be doing Long Shot, which should be fun. I guess that's it.
Yep.
Thanks everybody for listening. Please let us know your comments. Let me think, leave us a comment on collectededitionpodcast.com and let us know what you think, or hit us up on Twitter at collectededpod. That's collectededpod. This one was a lot of fun, and just basically Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah. And happy holidays.
And until we meet again, keep reading comics.
And be well.
You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.